folded the newspaper in quarters and quickly stuffed it into her purse, as if making the decision to stop obsessing over it. To hear her recall this time many years later, her primary concern was how the story might affect George's campaign. He'd worked so hard, and as far as she was concerned, was by far the best candidate. The idea that she could ruin things for him now was crushing. Her next thought was obvious. How would it affect her family? Most people, even close relatives, didn't know about this misadventure. It had taken her years to come to terms with this private heartache. Finally, she had come to understand that in no way did this terrible event, which had happened when she was just 17, define her. Still, it was mortifying to now have the whole world read about it, and making it worse, many of the details weren't even accurate. What might people think of her in light of this story? As she sat in the back seat of her car, surrounded on all sides by the maddening cacophony of bustling Dallas, she must have felt completely and utterly trapped. She tried to lower the tinted window to get some air. It was locked. "Can we put this down just a bit?" she asked the agent. He pushed a button and the window lowered about an inch. "A bit more?" she asked. He gave her another half inch. "Any more's not safe, ma'am," he told her. "I know," she said with a sigh. "I know." She asked him to turn on the air. When he did, she tilted her head back and fanned herself with her hand. The campaign had been a real roller coaster, down one moment, up the next. George was now on top with fresh primary wins in the states of Washington, Virginia, and South Carolina. Yet neither he nor his opponent for the nomination, Senator John McCain, had the momentum for a landslide victory, especially after McCain took New Hampshire. For months, these two men had been viciously attacking each other, and it had gotten very personal. For instance, McCain authorized advertisements that branded George as being anti-Catholic. George was furious, but no more so than his wife. Laura knew that George's unwavering Christian faith was the rock upon which his whole life was built, and that he would never have a pejorative word for anyone else's religion. It was a low blow, and the senator had to know better, or at least Laura thought so. "You have to fight back, Bushy," she told George, using her pet name for him. "You can't let him walk all over you. Show strength, for goodness sake." Even as the words came from her lips, she had to have been astonished by them. When did she become such a brawler? This woman who had once so eschewed politics that she'd made George promise upon marrying him that he would never make her give a speech. Now, a little more than 20 years on, politics was pretty much in her bones, and she had to admit, that was a pretty scary thought. Over the last year, Laura had been making stops with her mother-in-law, Barbara Bush, usually flying on the official campaign plane with George, but sometimes off on their own. Right now, she was waiting for Barbara to emerge from the Dallas Morning News building, where she'd been giving an interview. The Bush women would then be taken to the Dallas airport. Barbara was headed home. Laura was scheduled to board a flight to yet another tour stop, where she'd meet up with her husband. Laura was so lost in thought, it had to have jarred her when the door was flung open and Barbara quickly slid into the car. One of the Secret Service agents closed the door behind her. "Fiddlesticks!" Barbara exclaimed as she organized herself next to Laura. "What a waste of time." When Laura asked what happened, Barbara said she hadn't even done the interview. As the car slowly lurched from the curb, soon to be followed by the others, Barbara explained that the designated reporter had called in sick and that his replacement was late showing up. She didn't feel like waiting. With a malicious gleam in her eyes, she recalled telling them, "Here's an idea. Next time, plan